Welcome to episode number 33 of the Inside Running Podcast. Thanks to this week's sponsor, Jaybird. Jaybird Run Bluetooth headphones. Bit more about them next week. We are going to do a product review on them, but they're supporting the show this week as well. We've been having a few trots in them, getting used to them, just getting a bit of a feel for them, and we really appreciate their support for this week's show and next week's podcast as well. Welcome to my two co-hosts, Julian Spence and Bradley Croker.
G'day, Brady.
Hello, boys.
It's good. We're recording on a Sunday night. We should let the listeners know. I feel a bit more relaxed on a Sunday night than I am on a Monday night, and it's good to kind of record at the end of the week so we can just talk about our running week and then start fresh tomorrow morning.
Yeah, I'm glad you're relaxed and comfortable. All Brad's been talking about is how busy he is.
You just told me off air you've been drinking beer since 2 o'clock. Yeah. And you're not relaxed yet.
That's a regular day.
must have had a good day in the store. Now going out for dinner.
It's been retail has been a battle at the moment with weather like this. It's not the time to go buy running shoes for most people.
There we go. Starts off a whinge, minute 14 in, Brad. It's probably a bit longer than last week. He was teeing off at the Gold Coast this time last week. Bradley, take us through your week. Tell us all about your running week.
Right. So, it was a week of two halves. Started off pretty well and then it's gone pear-shaped the last couple of days. So, what did I do? Oh, that's right. So, it was a public holiday on Monday. So I headed out for a nice hour run and actually bumped into a guy out at Mulligan's who listens to the podcast and he was doing his long run. So it was pretty cool to bump into someone. He goes, "Oh, you Brad?" I'm like, "Yeah, yeah." He goes, "Oh, I listen to the podcast." I'm like, "Oh, cool." Because he'd never actually run out at Mulligan's before. He lives out at Yass, so which is about, I don't know, 50-minute drive from Mulligan's. So, he came to see what it was all about. So that was Monday morning. Then Monday arvo, just 35 minutes with 7 10-second hills. Tuesday just got out in the morning, bit wet, 4:12s for 36 minutes. And then this was my first session back because I had a week of just jogging. First session back was 8x2 minutes with a 1 minute float, or as Moose would say, Moose fartlek. But
that's a classic Moose fartlek.
just steals other people's ideas. And sessions and rebrands them.
Well, I'm not sure if you've seen this session, but the Australian 10K record holder, Benny Saint, also did this session this week and titled it Saint Fartlek. Did you see that one, Moose?
I semi-coach Ben, so that might be what.
Right. And one of his mates also did it with him and named it like, I'm going to murder this, but I think he did like a Star Wars reference and said like Han Solo fartlek. So anyone who's doing it, just putting their name in front of it. So I think that's a bit of a dig to the old big wise Moose who thinks he's claiming all these sessions when the big dogs probably really invented them.
Yeah, well, I just call it 8x2 minutes with 1 minute float.
Yeah, but that's because we're friends. It would be weird for you to call it Moose fartlek.
Anyway,
you're not session. Friends, you're bagging the shit out of each other, you two bikes. What are you talking about? Anyway.
Session went really well. Averaged just under 3 minute Ks for the 2 minute on and just under 3:20s for the float. So overall 3:05s, which I think is probably the quickest I've done that, certainly around Yerribee Pond. Yeah, and lead up to Biwa, I think I was more like sort of 3:08. So good session to get back into things. Then on Wednesday morning, when I bring it up here, I got out for an hour 45 over some rolling hills at 3:56s. So felt pretty good. Then Thursday morning, ran from home and actually tested out those Jaybird Run wireless headphones. So they arrived on the Wednesday and amazing. We'll talk about them next week, but certainly different to what I'm used to running with just my normal iPod headphones. So I did an hour in the morning, then in the arvo, just my standard 35-minute loop with 6 20-second strides at the end of it. So ran 4:03s for that. Then Friday, it was absolutely filthy day here in Canberra, freezing cold, wet and windy. And the session was, originally it was meant to be 2x10K around Yerribee, just getting used to sort of that pacing pace for Gold Coast. So mid 320s. But we decided that I'd probably get more benefit from just going out and running over some hills. So we changed it to 2x8K tempo with a 2 minute sort of float recovery. But in hindsight, because it was so wet, it would have been better around Yerribee. Session went amazingly well for the conditions. At one point, it was just horizontal rain, and my fingers were hurting, and my head was numb like an ice cream headache just from the. I should have worn a beanie, but I thought I'd overheat. Anyway, I averaged 3:22s for 16.5K, which I've never run that quick over those hills before. So I was pretty stoked doing that in those conditions. But in hindsight, I think there's a few places where I was slipping and sliding a little bit. And so anyway, I got through the session, cooled down, and then Friday night I noticed just walking around home that sort of just above my inside my knee, where sort of the adductors run down and attach down to sort of towards the knee, was just a little bit tight. Didn't think too much of it. Went out on Saturday morning from a 60-minute run, and it was bearable, but then it was pretty sore afterwards. So I decided to actually take today off just as precaution. My adductors are really, really tight all the way, up sort of the inside of my leg. So I think from Friday, just from slipping around, I've obviously overloaded them too much. I have actually had this once before, but I did run through it and it seemed to settle once I loosened off all the adductors. So, but I just thought there's no point pushing it at the moment. I'm not training for anything in particular, and a couple of days off won't hurt. So I was on track for about 180K a week and ended up with 140. So, because I was meant to run 36K today.
You said that last week.
So I knew that when I knew that there was probably it would have been stupid for me to run 36K, and I just thought, well, I might as well just take the day off then. So, yeah, that's my week.
Don't know if the old Bradley would have taken that day off. Probably would have tried to push through.
No, yeah, exactly. So I'd like to think that I'm maybe getting a little bit smarter in my older age as I'm training. And, it's still hard to do because it's just a massive part of your life. And when you go from running, like, pretty much twice a day every day to then just nothing – I had a bit of cabin fever today, so it's still hard to do.
You had one day off.
Yeah, I know, but it's still hard to do when you're used to just doing it all the time, and it's just my personality. But I know that deep down, I've made the right decision.
That session's so solid. Like 190 meters elevation in the wet, 16K.
Yeah, I was. The apparent temperature was -1, and it was 35 to 40K an hour. And so to put it in perspective, the best I ever ran for an hour out there before BWA was 3:27 pace. I guess it was bittersweet in that it was such a good session and felt amazing, but then has sort of, resulted in a niggle.
What shoes did you wear?
Oh, just Zoom Elites. So they were, yeah.
Were you going to fifth gear with that stuff? Like, are you working that pretty hard?
Around? So other than, obviously running up a couple of the hills, there's one hill probably 3/4 of the way through the session. It's close to 1 kilometre long. Definitely working on that, but then after that I was pretty cruisy. The last part was flat, so rolling 320s on the flat wasn't too hard. But I could have gone for another 20 minutes, I reckon.
Yeah. So this pacing job, 2 weeks' time, that kind of, although you're just doing a job, that 36K run was kind of, as you said last week, a bit of preparation for that. Does that change anything?
No, not really. I spoke to my coach tonight, and if we take a few days off this week or like have a really easy week this week, he's actually happy for me to build into that, and he's happy for me to do a long run, like a decent long run next week. Because we look back at what I did last year before the pacing, I did 180K this week, and then I still did 95, and I did 30, I did like 35K the week before the pacing job, and I still did 95 minutes two or three days out from the pacing. So I'm not concerned about the pacing at all. Yeah.
a bit of talk on the private messenger about why you shouldn't be pacing. You should be, there's some big dogs running the half, and it's a good opportunity to run fast. Still locked in though.
Yeah, no, I won't be running the half. I'll be there pacing. So, plus, I'd be more stressed if I was running the half about this niggle, because I'd be wanting to get sessions done or just, you know, the final touches. But because the pacing, like, I could do nothing for the next 2 weeks and still be fine with the pacing. Well, at least a halfway anyway.
Mm. Yeah. Good. Julian, tell us if any questions or queries for Bradley's week, or you roll straight into yours. Feel free to do whatever you like on a Sunday night here.
I'd still like to know how much he's going to get paid for this pacing job.
$1,000 for halfway, and then $250 for every 5K after that.
Oh yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So just under two grand if I go to 35K plus a few nights accommodation at the casino.
Cass, play a bit of roulette afterwards. It is an interesting question though, because you always think there's going to be opportunities in the future, but, you know, hindsight's a sweet thing where you could look back and go, geez, I was in the shape of my life and I used it to do a paid job instead of chasing possibly my fastest ever PB.
Yeah, but then I also look at a half marathon, and I'm not going to finish my running career worried about what my half marathon is. Like, to me, it's a nothing distance. For me, my goal is to run another good marathon. And if you have a look at somebody like Sean Crichton, like, I think back in the day, guys didn't really care about the half. It wasn't an event. Sean's PB 63 something, which he's a much better runner than that. But I don't think he regrets his career based on his 63 half, because guys back then didn't really focus on them. It was 10K or the marathon.
Back then?
Yeah.
It's not back then anymore, mate.
What do you mean? But the point is, it's not a champ. Well, okay, they do have a world half, but it's not as popular as the 10 or the marathon.
I reckon if you went to the Melbourne Marathon, you'd find that the entries for the half marathon is much higher than the marathon.
But when you finish running, do people generally ask you what your half marathon PB is, or is whether your marathon or your 10K?
Jeez, I hope they ask half marathon, because I'm looking better in that category.
Is that why you run?
Need a quicker half to set yourself up for a quicker full anyway? Like, you always want to make sure you're quicker over 10 and a half before you take that next jump in the marathon?
Well, no, because if you have confidence you can, even though you haven't actually run it on paper, but if you believe you can do it, then you don't need that. Like, you know, just because I don't go and run a Gold Coast half, go and run, I don't know, 65 low or 64 high, it doesn't mean that I'm not capable of running it.
Mm. Yeah, true. Yeah. Good discussion. Moose, flip us into your week back home, back in your comfort zone. Everything's going well, I'm sure, down in Ballarat. Nice and cold for you.
Very cold, so cold. Just, I don't bring the shorts out anymore. T-shirts not required, so they go to a different cupboard for the next few months.
I'm a bit worried about Moose, to be honest.
Oh, yeah?
But, yeah, Berlin's not that far away, and the Moose is just jogging around, going out for dinners, having beers, just thinking about...
That's funny.
Is the focus Berlin or the Kit Kat Club?
It's 50-50, but I was out running tonight and I thought, oh, yeah, geez, 6 weeks of just getting some nice solid mileage in, and then I've got probably, what, another 7 weeks of just solid marathon training. I'm going to be cherry ripe by Berlin.
How's the body?
It's getting better. Okay. So today, long run, well, this whole week I just got into a routine again. So every day ran two times. I tried to aim for about 90 minutes a day. So around about 20K a day was my goal, but I didn't really care so much. I just wanted to get into the routine of running twice. an hour and then 30, and I did them over hills most days, so just solid jogging basically. And then let me just check through and see if there's anything significant out of this. No.
Move on.
Oh, yeah, so Saturday I did, like, it was pretty cold in the morning. I was still debating. I had a sore foot the night before. Friday night, the foot was pretty bad. Foot's just been super unpredictable. Like, Friday night was as bad as it's been. And then Saturday morning, woke up feeling okay. Halfway through the session, all of a sudden, couldn't feel my foot anymore. And it's been brilliant ever since. So I have no idea what the hell was going on. But did a little 4x6 minutes. Ran with Skills, who's also, we're probably the two least fit people in Ballarat at the moment. So it was good to get some confidence back running with someone else who's also unfit. And we did I did that. He did a little bit less. And then 4x is basically 6 minutes. So around the Vic Park loop on the road, it wasn't the most impressive session. We knew it wouldn't be when we were running. We were kind of laughing at how slow we were going. First rep was 3:41s, which felt hard enough. Second rep, maybe some uphill, and that was 3:53s. But at that point, like, I knew this was a little bit of a joke, almost. Not a joke, but we weren't taking it very seriously. Next rep, we started to go a bit harder, 3:29s, and then I did the last one by myself and ran 3:18s, and that felt really comfortable. This was all really comfortable, and it was the first intensity I've done in 3 weeks. So you might not think it's intensity, but it felt like there was a bit of intensity there. Pulled up okay from it, no worries. Foot was good. And then this morning, got out on a long run in the shittest weather that you'll ever see in your life through some hills in Ballarat, and ran in thick socks, tights with calf sleeves underneath, like the thick or the long rundies, long sleeve t-shirt, jacket over the top, had a big sealer woolen beanie on, and I had like these Gore-Tex-y bike gloves that are so thick, and not one time during the whole run did I feel warm. So did I feel cold or warm? It was just perfect. So an hour 45, and I felt really good, like had the brakes on a lot. Ran with a few boys who, Ballarat doesn't have the fittest community at the moment, I don't reckon. We've all got something wrong with us. So felt good then, and then got out tonight and then ran the second run and just thought, oh, it's clicked. Like, it is actually clicked over now where I feel good running again. And it's taken 3 weeks for that to happen, but it's happened. And so next week I'll get into a little bit more intensity, kick the mileage up a little bit, and I'll be rolling. I'm totally confident. I'm trusting this process, and yeah,
Well, they say a day a mile, don't they? Like, it's only been 21 days.
Day a kilometre or day a mile?
Day a mile. Wait, 42 days to come good after a marathon.
Well, sure. I reckon sometimes.
Has it been 3 or 4 weeks? Isn't it 4 weeks? It's
been a month today.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, 3 weeks today. No, 4 weeks today. 4 weeks. Yes.
Yeah. Should have come good on Friday.
I've got a question for you. Are you, like, slightly concerned that you've said that your foot's good, like, has been good the last 2 days, but are you slightly concerned going into a marathon block with your body not being maybe 100%?
Yeah, I am. So I'm doing all the right things for it. I'm doing a solid strengthening program. I've got shockwave treatment. I sleep with a boot that puts my foot in dorsiflexion. I apply heat to it before I run every morning. I vary my shoes depending on what helps it and what doesn't. There's always, I'm going to get, like, I don't wear orthotics to run in, but I've got some orthotics that I don't currently wear because they're a little too aggressive, but for my work days to put in my work shoes. And there's always the option of going back and getting another cortisone injection if things don't improve. So there's not, like, when you have this injury, there's not a lot, like, there's not a lot you can do outside what I'm currently doing. It's just a real unknown injury.
And so, complete rest is worse?
Exactly, yeah. It doesn't particularly help. So you could take, say I had a week off after the Great Ocean Road Marathon. It didn't help at all. Like, I came back just as sore. So it's not the... Rest is not the answer for plantar fasciitis, really.
Yeah.
They treat it like a tendon. Although it's a fascia, it gets treated like a tendonitis, where you want to be loading it.
Yeah, plenty of time as well. I think you got, like, when you're coming off marathons as well, the big base is there. You just need to string a few weeks together.
Yeah, good.
You're right.
Yep.
My week kicked off with, Queen's birthday. I don't know about you boys, but I hate running this time of the year when it's so dark early and dark in the morning. So it's good to have a public holiday to get out in some daylight hours. So I got out for an easy 6K in the morning, had Monday afternoon off. Just, I was mowing the lawns and stuff, and I was cutting back the mileage this week. So I just cut out my 35-minute second run and just chilled out because I knew I only had hit 160K for the week. So I had Monday afternoon off. Tuesday, drove to Bendigo for Richard's Hill Loop, got there absolutely hammering rain the night before and all the way down to Bendigo, and I thought, oh, I'm in trouble here. Going to be doing some ice skating through the bush. Drove out there, ran for about 200 metres and thought, it's really rocky this one as well. Like, it's pretty unsafe at the best of times. So, made the decision to leave that location and go to One Tree Hill in Bendigo, which is a sealed road. It's about... Oh, people that know the area, it's about 3K from the bottom to the top, and then you've kind of got 2K downhill afterwards. So ran from the bottom to the top and then over the top and down, did a UE at the 5K mark and then did it again. So it wasn't a bad session. First time I've done this session. There is a race that's called King of the Mountain that goes from the bottom of One Tree Hill to the top. So I've done that, a lot of times. So I knew what that first 3K was like. And on our Sunday long run in Bendigo, we usually have a bit of that in that track as well. So I've always jogged over that, but it's the first time I've done a hilly tempo like that there, and it was good. Same thing though, Brad, probably not as cold, but the windy and the kind of rain's coming in sideways, and one of those sessions that you just had to harden up and get it done. Nothing glamorous about it at all. And because I did on Tuesday, my day off work, I kind of felt I can't really whinge about this. I've got the day off work to be a full-time athlete here. I've just got to harden up and get it done. Felt good. Averaged 3 minute 20 kilometres. Ran, just over 33 minutes for 10K and 193 metres of elevation. This one's not quite as hard as Richard's Hill Loop though, because it's got kind of rolling hills. So it's probably got, I don't know, seven hills in the whole thing, but they go for long periods of time and then big downhills, whereas his other hill loop in Bendigo probably has 20 hills, but they're kind of shorter and sharper. So felt good, picked up a few course records. The Bendigo boys don't really do sessions over there, so it was good to picked up, six, which, it was half decent, so I was pretty happy with that one. Good to get some hills in the legs and felt strong over that. Easy afternoon run back in Echuca on Tuesday afternoon. Got out for 16K Wednesday morning at 4:28, wet and muddy and stuff again, and then got hammered by rain on Wednesday afternoon for 8K, 4:17 pace. That wasn't much fun. Thursday morning, out for my morning 8K. Didn't do a session Thursday afternoon. I did 8 by 10-second hills because I see it on Brad's Strava all the times. And I thought, I'm not doing a session and Richard wants me to do some strides, but I might, and I don't know, I'd actually love to ask you, Brad, what kind of, because we don't have any hills in town, but I've kind of got this, it's kind of like a road going down to a caravan park. Like, it's hardly a hill, but how steep do you do those hills?
I don't know, I guess it'd be 4 or 5%. Like not that steep that you can't run up it, but steep enough that you feel like you're really recruiting a lot more muscles.
Okay. This might be kind of in between. Yeah. It's kind of like a driveway, but, it was nice. It was good just to break that session up. Did a couple of those, and 10 seconds goes pretty quick. It's over pretty quickly. So, that was good. Tested out the old Jaybird Run headphones on Friday morning. nearly got hit by about 15 cars because they're so good at noise cancelling that I didn't know what was going on. You run around just there. We'll talk about it more when we do the product review next week. But, man, I put them in and it was like going to a whole different planet. Saw one of my mates, Daz Carmody. He ran straight past me. I don't know what he said to me. I couldn't hear what he was, you know. Could have been a good morning or you're an absolute meathead and I wouldn't have known. I just waved to him and kept running. Big session for the week was on Saturday, so jogged easy through Friday. Did 5x3K at half marathon effort with the plan to punch the fourth one. Really wanted to do them on the dirt down at Scenic Drive where I've been doing this session a lot. Ran down there Friday night and checked it and I thought this could be good. As long as we don't get any more rain, it's going to be okay to do the reps down there. So I went down there, warmed up, got about a K into my warm-up and just started bucketing down. And but the rain didn't worry me too much. I don't mind running in the rain. Like, we ran a whole marathon in the rain at Berlin last year, but it was just that whole unknown if the track was going to hold up. And I didn't really want to do an injury because I hate that ice skating feeling when you're trying to do faster sessions. And also I wanted to do this. I just wanted to tick this session off. I didn't really want to dominate it. But it was a kind of key session that I needed to get done. So I'd warmed up, fully had my old Vaporflies on, ready to go. And then I made the late decision to jump in the car and drove home. Got a bit more clothing, got a hat, because that's always good to run with a hat on when it's raining. And got a couple of extra singlets and a long sleeve and went out the industrial estate and did another warm-up out there. So probably 10 minutes in the car. So I did a quick 2-minute warm-up, 2K warm-up out there and some strides. And then, done 5x3K, which, not really that hard of a session, but the conditions just made it terrible. And one of those mentally draining sessions, it just felt like I was out there forever because it goes for about an hour when you're having the 3 minutes recovery in between. And just couldn't warm up, just felt so cold the whole session. And kind of, I'm not sure if you guys have experienced, probably the first time for me, but when you're legs kind of get so cold that you're trying to drive them and it's like they just don't want to heat up and run. Like it was a strange feeling. Got it done, but I ran in the long sleeves for the first three and then like changed gloves over at one stage and I just felt frozen while I was doing that. What did I run? Like 9:31, 9:24, 9:23, 9:07 and 9:28. So didn't look at the watch at all and just went on that feel and felt really good on the faster surface though. And not glamorous, I said that before, but running in the rain and those kind of conditions hopefully makes me a bit tougher, like the big Moose did leading into Berlin last year. I know you did a lot of sessions like that, Moose.
Lots of wet ones.
Tough man training. It really, I think the mental benefit you get out of that's more, and sometimes Benny Walker might be out there doing reps when I go out there, or some of the boys on the bikes, and just knowing that you're out there with these trucks driving around, and there was nothing stimulating at all about it, and I just had to grind away and get it done. Got out for 7K, got rolling a bit in the afternoon, averaged 4:01s, and then did 2 hours this morning in Bendigo with Andy Buchanan and Jamie Cook and Nigel Preston and stuff. It was a good group. Leon Keeley, another Bendigo runner's back again. And, did 28.5K in the 2 hours and averaged 4:13. So good week for me. We cut it back. I hit 162. 2 weeks to go until Gold Coast. Starting to get excited. Starting to get real.
So what's planned for the taper? Any specific strategy you follow?
I have just got a message here from Richard, actually. I hope he doesn't mind that I read it out. But, I'll summarise it. Backing off to 150Ks this week. So, it's a bit less than Brad's 180K week. Oh, I've still got 2 weeks to go. Yeah, so 150K this week. Just some shortest. Not really. 8x1K and then some reps, half a monofartlek on Thursday and some reps on Saturday. And then I'll probably only do 90 minutes on Sunday. So, probably doing a 75% week, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But,
so just nothing that he does, like, in particular? There's no sessions he always follows or whatnot?
No, over the years we've kind of gone through phases. I always used to do, like, a 5K hit out, like a park run or a time trial somewhere flat the week before half marathon, just to run way quicker than half marathon pace, but I'm not doing that this time around. I think because I run these sessions pretty well off high mileage, we generally keep it reasonably high, and just keep ticking things along. I think it's, I haven't seen my week, the week of the race, but yeah, this week's going to be 150 with, yeah, 75%. And he just, his big message is just don't force anything. Like, just let it flow. He even said, like, my 1K reps on Tuesday, if you run 3:10s, he doesn't care. Just wants me to do them comfortable. So
just feel good.
Just feel good and just keep. Yeah, I probably can't get any fitter between now and Gold Coast, but I can do some stupid things that could impact my race performance.
Yeah, definitely.
But hey, which Brad, when I'm hearing your story about what'd you say? Which I'm prone to. I've never been injured. We spoke about this last week. I'm the guy who goes to different training locations so he doesn't cook his abductors trying to do sessions in the wet.
There's a barb.
There's a barb, yeah. Oh, got him. Yeah, should have went to Yarrabee, Brad.
Wake up, Brad. Wake up.
Maybe you need an injury to recharge the batteries.
Maybe. Might have a couple of weeks off after Berlin or something. See what happens. Oh, yeah. Let's thank some Patreon supporters. I'm going to go first. Ben Henry. Ben Henry's from Melbourne. Going to run an absolutely massive PB down in up at Gold Coast. Bloke is flying. Thanks for your support, Ben. Andy Lane. I don't know Andy personally, but thank you for the support. Andy Lane as well. And Andy Rogers. Andy's been listening to all your Tell Me Your Tale stuff and all the Road to Berlin stuff. He's from Kahuna, just up the road from Echuca, and listens to the podcast when he's working away. So a big thanks to Andy for his support. And Alan Peacock. Alan put us in touch with Gary Mayer from last week's interview, and often keeps me in the loop with many things going on in the running world. So thanks, Alan, for pointing some things out for us, and your support on patreon.com.
Yeah, and I'm going to thank Chris Hill, Rob Wilmot, Nathan Geary, and Smith from Prospect.
Smith didn't leave his last name.
Smith. There was a one-name character, Smith, from Sex and the City. Remember him?
I never watched Smith. That television show.
I didn't watch that.
He was a waiter getting into the modelling game. Smith.
All right, I might move on and give a couple more shout-outs to Seamus from Melbourne. And Etienne Bloomstein Jones, who's a Canberra boy. So I've done a few long runs with Etienne, and believe he
gets an Australian singlet, right?
Yeah, so he's a an Australian rep, mountain running, I believe. Yeah.
I did meet Etienne at Hobart Half Marathon, I think. Would that be right? Was he down there?
Yeah, I think. Yeah, he was.
Yeah. Shook my hand, said g'day. Good bloke. Big week of news, boys. Let's go through this. I don't know if we'll go through fast or slow, but we'll kick off with Bundoora, state 10K champs for yesterday cross country. Always loved this race. Wasn't there, but good to kind of see some pretty solid results. Jack Rayner took it out from the Bendigo boy, Andy Buchanan, 3 seconds, pretty close finish with Joel Tobin White coming in third. So super deep top three, some pretty big names there, and sounded like a good race. I heard it was windy. Andy and Jack went out, I think they went out pretty cruisy. I think John Dutton and Steve Dineen had some Box Hill tactics going on through the first 2K loop. And then
someone explain that to me quickly. Like,
nearly fell off my seat.
It's a 10K
when I watched,
race.
Yeah, I saw some Instagram stories yesterday and I couldn't make sense of it. I saw those two guys leading. Maybe the pace was just going that slow. They had to get things ticking along a bit, but yeah, not sure what they were doing leading those kind of boys through.
I don't understand. Like, if you're in a group, right, and you look to your left and you have Jack Rayner, who's just run 28.40 or 28, what was it, 28.40 down at Boxes, 28.30, and the other solid side, you've got Andy, who won it the year before, and Joel Tobin White is
just ran 65.
One and a half. Yeah, he's a fucking gun too. And you think, you know what? I'm going to put my foot down. I'm going to break these fellas. I'm going to put my foot down. What is going through your head? I get that it's all nice to be brave, but just be smart. Like, Stephen needs smart. I'm sure he wasn't up there doing that.
I'm with you, Moose. But we touched on this on a previous podcast about there's a thing called physiology, and you cannot beat physiology. So,
and you know, but if If you're,
it could have been super slow though. Like, what happens if they're rolling? Like the... What happens if they're going 350k pace and like?
They ran like 30 minutes, didn't they?
They weren't dawdling.
Yeah.
I think Andy said something like they almost acted as pacemakers through that first 2K loop, and then the race started after that first 2K.
What did Andy say about having the, like someone up there who was leading the race that he was just, was it a giggle? Like, were they saying, what are you doing? Like, what did Andy say?
Nah, I didn't comment on any of that stuff. He did give me a play-by-play, though. I forgot to tell you, when I did my long run this morning, I rocked up 3 minutes late. The Bendigo guys wait for nobody.
That's so good.
Yeah, I knew it too. I forgot
to tell you. They probably wait for anybody else. They thought, oh, Ripper, fucking Brady's not coming to that.
Forgot
moving before he shows
his car's not here yet. I forgot to turn the PowerPoint on my phone charger. Woke up, I'm like, geez, I'm feeling good this morning. Check my phone, nothing's happening, it's dead. Check my Garmin, 6:48, and I'm like, oh no, this group leaves at 7, absolutely fanged it in the car, still got there late, then I had to fang it to catch up with the guys. And then, a couple of 340Ks straight out of the car on a Sunday morning doesn't work real good. But then when I did catch the pack, Andy did give me a play-by-play recount of him and Jack, just how close it was. And yeah, he's been a bit unlucky. He's come second 3 times now, I think. So second fastest leg at Jales Park to Ryan Gregson, second the other week to Stewie at Cruden Farm, and now second to Jack Rayner at Bundura. So he's in good company.
That's not unlucky.
Yeah,
he's losing to Ryan Gregson, Stewie McSween, and Jack Rayner.
They've all been quite small margins too. Yeah, he'll have his time, but yeah, geez, he's a good cross country runner. Like, to push a 28:30 guy the way he did, and yeah, he had the lead late, and then Jack went again, and just couldn't close him at the end.
Good on him.
He's solid. I think, I know it's not till next year, but World Cross Country Champs, he'd be looking at a spot on that team. And he fronts up to all the cross country. Like, he's the one common guy who's at most of them, so he's pretty good at it. Girls race, females race, Maddie Hills wins from Sinead Diver, and Kaya Fryer in third spot. Pretty solid times as well for 10K.
Wasn't there something like Matt? Oh, well, Brad will be able to ask her in the interview. But someone, I think Bree told me this was Maddie Hill's first cross country since 2006.
Yeah, it's on her Instagram.
Was it? Oh, well, yeah, that's where Bree would have found it.
Good bit of,
I think she's friends with
bit of research, Bree.
That's interesting. Like, why, given you're a distance runner, why would you not have run cross country?
Especially when doing a bit of research, like, she was a gun cross country runner as a junior. She finished 16th and 18th at World Junior Cross.
Yeah, but didn't she like leave the sport for like 7 years or something, Brad? You done that bit of research yet?
Yeah. No, I know that, but she still hasn't run cross, like, but
yeah, she since went to she's been back.
She went to like Glasgow, so it's 2014. So you know what I mean. I'll ask her that.
She hasn't been in Victoria for long either, has she? And Victoria's kind of the dominant cross-country state.
Well, she lives here now, does she?
Yeah. She trains with, my good mate Zaka. She's, He's trying to keep in front of her all the time. I think she keeps a few of those boys pretty honest. Ask her that as well, Bradley. Zaka? No, I don't know. Who coaches her, actually? Because I know that when I interviewed Adam Diddick originally on Tell Me Your Tales, he said that he's no longer coaching her, so I'm not sure. Maybe someone in America, I think. What about we're just talking about all this stuff we don't know about this week's guest?
I'll find out for you. Maybe, listeners, just fast forward if you want to find out about Maddie Heiner. We'll interview her after this.
What about Big Stewie over at, I don't even know where this race was. I think maybe somewhere in Belgium, but runs 3:34 for the 1,500 metres overnight.
Yeah. For the win, too.
When I saw that, like, for a guy who's, like, training at the moment for probably some of the longer stuff, like, that is impressive. So good.
Yeah. That
and
range.
That's what we were discussing on our long run today. Mona, he said, he was going to be he's the next one I wanted to run a marathon, like, shortly. And now he's gone and done this just to increase his track potential or solidify it.
I reckon he's got a big 10K in him.
Yeah.
Coming up.
Well, he's got that, came second the other week. or did he win
that
race?
Just got done on 28. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's mixing it with the big boys over there.
How do you train for that though? Like to run a 28:25 one week and then what 10 days later run 3:34? Like that's amazing to do that in a short period of time.
But I think this is where a lot of guys, especially the old guys, will tell you that like the 1500 is still an aerobic event. So if you're strong, you can potentially still run quick. You know, and these guys still do speed work. Like
And their speed work is fast, Yeah, that's good. Hey, big news out of Chicago this week. Mo Farah and Galen Rupp was announced a few weeks ago, but Mo Farah's going to run his next marathon there as well. Thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I'm not too – I don't care too much about that stuff.
Yeah, let's wait. Let's talk about it more in October. Speaking of marathons, which you two boys would be interested in, Kipchoge and Kipsang both confirmed for Berlin.
Big dogs. Yeah. All the big dogs run. Didn't see our name in the media release though, Moose, did you?
I did speak to Nadine. She said she was going to send it out, but...
Speak to her during the week, Nadine?
I just sent a message saying, hook us up with some flights.
218, man. She'd be replying straight away to you, I reckon. Took her a few days to get back to me.
Remember when she didn't let me into the group for like months on end?
You were getting so paranoid.
Yeah. Remember the bloke that tried to give up his spot?
No.
You were going to put your drinks out on the drink table for him to pick up. Remember that plan?
Yep.
Remember the bloke that handed you a drink at 39K
and
when he was struggling?
He said regardless of what Berlin Marathon say about swapping you in for me in terms of the preferred start, you'd still buy me a beer. I'm still waiting.
Oh, mate, that's because you couldn't handle any more beers by the time you got to our apartment.
Yeah, that's right. We're in the bathtub.
Couple of losers want to do a podcast when everyone else is having fun and dancing.
Still,
and then
I've still
just
got all that audio on my phone.
I've
never listened it back.
Dead
shit. Anyway, let's move on. Another announcement. Yeah, we're just rolling through announcements of people running marathons tonight.
Yeah, let's talk about the guy who did the marathon, Sean Crichton, because he is the podcast. He's a bit of a favourite, isn't he?
Friend of the show. Like Sean. Yeah, one of the better interviews we've done.
Perth Marathon won it in 2:32. I don't think it's too flat over at Perth either, or it never used to be.
Yeah, Bradley. So
it's a different marathon. So I think it is pretty flat because they're running it around the lake. But I was messaging Sean today, and he said that it was quite windy. Hang on. It's in between all of the Canberra Raiders messages that we send each other. Where was it? He goes, was a strong headwind between 17 and 29K, which killed the Aussie over 50s record. Pleased with the run, though. And then I asked him whether he was going to now reload for Melbourne Marathon, but he never answered that one. He just talked about trying to get the Raiders across the line against the West Tigers. But I think that was his plan, was to maybe have another crack in Melbourne. And what makes that run really good is he's been battling like sciatic stuff for the last couple of weeks. So it was touch and go whether he was even going to run it. And he was a race ambassador as well for that.
He won by 3 minutes. Got the win pretty easy. Picked up $2,000, went over for the ambassador's role. Not a bad gig.
Yeah.
Not a bad gig.
For a lawyer?
Yeah, probably wouldn't get out of bed for that kind of money, though, usually.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Jeez.
The other big money, Jess Trengove and Celia Sullivan, head-to-head for 40K if they break 2:28 at the Gold Coast Marathon. This was a big announcement. You'd care about this one, wouldn't you, Moose?
Yeah, this is fun. This is fun, this stuff. This is local. This is going to be relevant. This is a likely occurrence, I think. I think it can happen because there'll be males in this race that can pacemake. There'll be two girls going head to head, which means fast times generally because these girls both run pretty hard. Sullivan especially. She ain't a sit and kick girl. She likes to get the head down and do work. So, and they're not going to sit and kick if there's 40 grand on the line. If to to go under 228. So what's 228 like? We're looking about 330 per K?
Yeah, I'd say about that. I can work
about
it out.
That, yeah, slightly quicker, maybe 328, 329, something like that.
Yeah, all right.
But you know it gets... So if they both break it, it gets split between the two of them.
Yeah, it's still 20 grand.
Really?
Though.
Yeah. So it's not winner takes all. So
That's a bad call.
So if you had two guys...
We spoke about this on the podcast.
Yeah.
I wasn't listening.
No yeah. guys so are going to do it though. So their worst case scenario, they both break it and they get 20 grand each, plus some probably appearance money and some, well, maybe not appearance money if they're putting up those kind of prizes, but that it also come close to, because you pick up Oceania prize money and you'd probably come across top five overall. So it's still a decent payday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's, I would have and thought
I'd back,
though.
It's, I'd back it's, most, both of them to do it too, I reckon.
It's 330K yeah. pace.
Yeah, I worked that out in my head.
Good work. I'll give you an A-plus for maths.
I would have thought you would know that. That would have been around your PB for a while.
Nah, I debuted at 226, mate. I think my average marathon time is about 221. What's yours?
Somewhere around that.
No, it's not.
Who knows their average marathon time? Who gives a shit about
it? I just went 226, 221, 220, 221 divided by 4. It's got to be around 221. I don't know it. I'm just talking rubbish off the top of my head.
As if you don't know it. That's the stuff that you rattle off when you go and give your guest presentations around a Chukamoema.
I'll Google it
BradyFalfall.com.
Yeah, hit it up. I've got some new information on there. Keep me coming up.
Got a new speech to deliver?
Keep me up in search engine optimization. Keep me up there. A bit of SEO. What was it? 26 plus 21. What did I say it was? I'll tell you what exactly it was. 88.
Does the local sportsman club get
22? 222 is the average. 222. That's not a bad average from four starts. That's not a bad average.
Oh, you can keep your average, mate. Keep your average.
Yeah, thanks. Minimos, do you know anything about this result and race, Bradley? Up your way, up Sydney. Had some big names there. I know nothing.
Because I ran with Jordan last Sunday and he said he was heading up for it. And I read the press release before the race and, it was pretty deep, the field. It had Liam Jordan, Kev Batt, and Ed Goddard, who finished, I think it was fourth or fifth at the Sydney 10. But Liam blew him away. He won in 30-15. So it's not a quick course. It's quite hilly. It's always a good lead-in race to City to Surf because it's got a few hills. To put in perspective, the course record's held by Marty Dent and Brett Cartwright. Both have run like 30.08, and they're obviously been some of Australia's best runners in the past. So for him to go 30.15 on what I'd imagine would be a pretty breezy day up there, it was a great run because he was first, Guzman was second in 30.54. Kev Batt third in 30.55, and then Ed Goddard was fourth pretty much same time as Kev Batt. So looks like Liam cleared out, and then it was a battle for the minor places. In the women's, Abigail Regan won the race in 35.31. Marnie Ponton second, 35.35. And third was Charlotte Wilson, 36.25. And that's Liam's partner, isn't it?
It is, correct.
Yeah.
Liam's had a busy weekend. Like he's rolled around Bundoora 10K and then obviously jumped on a plane and got up there.
I was surprised when I saw his...
Yeah. Well, I think he was 10th or 12th or something like that across the line. So I think he's pretty loyal to the club, like obviously Athletics Essendon, and he seems to go around a lot of them. He did the same thing the week of St. Anne's 8K and then found himself up in Albury the next day having a crack at Nail Can Hill.
Yeah, right. Well, he's a strong man. He might be able to get away with it. Mm-hmm. Strong legs.
That's it. Dean Whelan has this week's listener question. It's a good one. What pre-run warm-up do you guys each individually do before a run? Do you walk out the door and hit start on your watch, or do you do some kind of warm-up jog? and stretch routine or activation work before your morning and afternoon runs? And does this routine differ between easy running days or when you have specific sessions? Brad's old. Sure. Brad would have some.
Sure. Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing.
Brad's
the body on him would need some warming up.
But, well, no, not really. So I normally, if I drive to Mulligan's, I will jump out of the car. I'll make sure I get all my headphones and everything sorted. At the moment, I'll put my gloves on, do up my shoes, and then I pretty much climb through the fence. And, you know, you've been there, Moose, where we run.
I have been to.
Yeah, sometimes I'll have a quick piss in the bush. Sometimes I do some just glute activation thing. So this one where I stand on one leg, sort of throw the hip out to the side and then bring it back up and try and square it up. So it's a bit of like just glute med. So I do like 15 on each leg and then generally start running. And in the morning, I'm probably 4:35s to 4:40s first kilometer. In the afternoons, 4:20s. That's what I do for my just easy runs.
Okay, what about we'll talk about our easy runs and then we'll go to our sessions.
All right.
What do you do, Moose?
Well,
bit of planter. Nothing. Yeah. Nothing. What, you're a broken man as well. What are you talking about? You'd have to do a bit of stuff. Oh, you run at 9 o'clock most mornings though, don't you? So you're probably warmed up from walking around. It's nice and sunny and, yeah, the body's warmed up already.
Bed still. I get up and put the coffee on and then I put a heat pack in the microwave, sit there, have my coffee, and then warm my foot up, and out we go. Slow to start, and then I just start rolling. 450, 455 sort of pace. So, yeah, no, I don't do anything. I don't think there's a lot of evidence to suggest that it helps, really, sort of dynamic work. Dynamic work maybe before a harder session, but geez, you wouldn't find many people keen enough to do that before an easy run, I think.
Yeah, I'm pretty similar as well. Kind of alarm goes off, walk around the house a bit, just getting organised, getting some clothes on, and then I'm pretty much out the driveway and straight into 4:35 or 4:40, and then see how the body feels if I get rolling. Then don't have much time to do that stuff either. Like if you've got to be home by a decent time, I'd rather the extra 10-minute sleep if the body can cope okay with getting out the door and rolling through there. What about sessions, boys? Have you got a kind of routine you hit there?
Yeah, I do. I'll also mention it. For my morning runs, I've generally been up for close to an hour before I run because I do have a coffee beforehand. So it's not as if I, basically hit snooze on the alarm, get some clothes and walk out the door. I've generally been up for an hour, which makes it easier to get rolling.
You guys are living in a different world than me and all the punters out there, I reckon, who are getting out there in the dark and kind of got to make the most of it. Home by 7. If you're not home by 7, you're running late in my house.
Yeah, see, I'm home. As long as I'm home by 10 to 8, because I only work 2 minutes down the road. Mm. So for my session days, this is one area I still think I could improve on. I do, a 5K warm-up, which often does get rolling towards the end, so I'll be close to 4-minute Ks by the end of it. And then I generally sometimes I'll wear the shoes that I'm doing the session in. For example, that Mulligan's run I did on Friday, I warmed up in the Zoom Elites and did the session in that. So if that's the case, I pretty much just have a quick stretch, do like 3 or 4 strides of, 80 meters or something, and then I sort of get into it, which for some of my quicker sessions means that the perceived effort is actually quite high for the first couple of reps because I'm probably not activated enough, and then it starts to feel easier, 5 or 10 minutes into the session. But I just don't, I just don't find, I prefer just to get the session started. Rather than spend, half, I know some squads spend like 20 or 30 minutes doing drills and, whereas I'd prefer to just get in and get it done, especially at the moment where there's not as much daylight around, don't have time to spend too much time warming up. Mm. But yeah, basically 5K, change shoes if I have to, a few strides, go to the toilet quickly and into it.
Yeah, Moose.
Yeah, just go for a jog normally, warm up pace, change shoes, do a few A and B skips, which you can Google if you want to see what they look like, do a few heel kicks, a couple of strides, and that's me. I'm away.
Yeah, I'm pretty similar to you, kind of anywhere between 3 to 5K warm-up. And then I've got like this, I like to do 25 A skips, 25 butt kicks, 25 high knees, and then a few of those windmill ones where you kind of stretch out your arms. And then that kind of gets me maybe 100 meters, and then I like to do some strides back, and I do that 3 times. And then I put my flats on and then get started. I do like that transitioning from jogging shoes to stopping, put your flats on, your lighter shoes, and then, yeah, kind of, it's just like a transition between, okay, it's time to start going fast now. And that's worked for me for a while. Sometimes, yeah, a few little stretches there if I've got a bit of a niggle or something, but other than that, all good. Hide the car key somewhere and then, go from there.
I think it's one of the good things about being a bit of a more of a distance runner than a track runner is that it's not as important to be completely activated, because the pace that you can often ease into a lot of the sessions.
Oh yeah, one thing I should add, if I am doing a track session like say quarters, I sometimes like to do like one or two 200s at the pace that I've got to hit the quarters in, just to like tune my body into this is what's, you know, spot on pace or too fast or too slow. And I feel that's good, like an effort, a stride that goes longer than kind of 30 seconds, just to really open up a bit.
Yeah, that's good. Some people, I've toyed with that in the past of doing a long effort, so about 3 minutes worth of like a 3 minute effort building. That's been something that I've done in the past, just so that, well, there is a physiological reason for doing it, but it gets you to the onto the start line and you just feel a lot more comfortable hitting the pace from the gun rather than just a few sort of 10 second strides. It just relaxes and it just gets you to the system you need working straight away, basically.
Yeah, and it's not bad for your confidence as well. Like say I'm doing 400s in 68, if I kind of feel like I'm floating or jogging a 234, it kind of goes, all right, that's, you know, nothing to be worried about in that session. You can do that pace kind of thing. And I reckon it just tunes you in really well. Okay, yeah. Moose on the loose. Hopefully we answered your question there, Dean. I think we did a pretty good job of it. Let us know if we didn't.
Yeah.
Over to you, Moose. Moose on the loose. Fire up.
I'm not going to fire up tonight. Sorry, gang. But I'm going to... when it occurs, you don't feel real... as relaxed as I am now about it. But how about when you go out for a run and it's on a popular place, so say you're running not Mulligan's, not the industrial estate, let's say
like the 10 Brady's in Melbourne,
running around the 10, I'm around the lake, Brad's running around the lake in Canberra,
Port of Echuca, that's pretty busy. Yeah, a few runners get down there.
Yeah, okay, whatever. The Port of, anyway, so you go out for a jog and then you might run your first sort of couple of K, you're warming into it, you're running around 4:30 pace maybe, let's say, and then someone comes past you slightly quicker, so they roll past, it's quite awkward because you might say hello to them, like they might look across, there's a period where you're actually running together. But then there's the most awkward section, and the most annoying thing is when they run in front of you, then they sort of slot in. You think, oh, okay, this guy's just going to keep going off. That's fine. Well, no, most of us would probably want to take him down pretty quickly, but then he or she just slows up. It's actually probably a little bit more awkward if it's a lady, because it feels like you're... you're forced to go around them again. If they go ahead and slow down and you just keep either picking it up slightly or staying at the same pace, all of a sudden you're running right up behind them and having to either slow down yourself, which is bloody annoying, or go around them, which you look like a dill. You look like you've got some sort of ego issue letting someone pass you, and that's what's really awkward. And that annoys me. Because the person who's behind you has obviously just made a surge to get around, and then they can't hold the pace. Mm. And, yeah, anyway, it's not a big deal, I guess, but it's a very common occurrence. So the other week we're out with on Monday loop, finishing off our run, and it heads back to the lake for the last sort of 3K, and we're just jogging along maybe 4:30, 4:40 pace, and all of a sudden these fellas behind us, one of them's wearing big tracksuit pants, the other one's got like a hoodie on, just shout out, "Excuse me, boys," from behind, and they just come around us at about 4:10 pace maybe, just blowing, and we're all just like, none of us moved, which was not rude, because they stayed at like a second behind us, but they kind of ran around us on the path, and all of us sort of looked and joked and just had a chuckle. But then Mono very just doesn't take to that very well, just chases them down and sits behind them, burns them, let them know who is the boss in town. And we're all quite proud of him. But that's one way to handle those situations. And I think we'd probably all do that, I reckon, if we were out there by ourselves, if someone like that passed us. But, yeah, this one sort of led off on a tangent. I do have a question, though. This is what I want to utilize Moose on the Loose for with tonight.
Oh, Moose has a question segment.
Mm. I have a question. Yeah, I know I'm taking up time, but
Moose is confused. Moose on the Loose. Moose has a question. This is good. You're branching out.
Yeah, we're going to I want to get some feedback from listeners, because a little bit of an argument on the Facebook page maybe about last week, talking about Launceston, or the week before, about what brings someone to a fun run and what's important to them when they rock up to an event, a running event. So for myself, I would like the course to be fast and to be well organized, convenient process of arrival to race and finish. I don't want any course mishaps, like people, volunteers that send you the wrong way. They're really important, but they're well less important to the middle of the packer who just kind of follows the leader and doesn't have to worry about where to go a lot of the time. So we're going to send an email out, or Brady's going to do this for me. Good on you, Brady.
Yeah, got the most spare time amongst the three of us here, I'll tell you what.
To the Patreons, and we might put a Facebook post up, and the question will be, what is most important to you when you attend a fun run? Will it be, is it a scenic course, parking, the drink stations, cost of entry, the medal you get at the end, any prizes, merchandise like t-shirts or hats or whatever, the atmosphere post race, if there's like food vans or entertainment, or if there's any other family races that the kids can do? So they're the sort of things that I'd really love feedback on. And we will put a Facebook post up, and we'll also send an email to the Patreons, because we have your email. We don't have everyone's email that listens. So yeah, interested to hear the responses, and appreciate in advance your time getting back to us on that.
You're getting into the fun run business, Moose.
Are you just saying this because Nick Earl called you out on in the Facebook page, because you were saying it's all about, no, Brad was saying it was all about fast times, and you were saying it's not all about fast times, and then Nick Earl was like, well, why did you go to the other side of the world to run a marathon for a fast time? Am I reading this scene right? Is that pretty much what happened?
Yeah,
that's pretty much what happened. But he doesn't really have a good point, because the Berlin Marathon, people don't go there just for a fast time. There's entertainment the whole way along. It's a very historical event. The city is amazing. It's what you travel there for, the city. The course, yes, it's fast, but it's also very well organized. It's great atmosphere, prestigious time of the year. Like, it's part of a holiday. But why?
What was the main reason for you going to Berlin?
Well, we wanted to do an overseas marathon, and for me, I wanted to do it on a fast course that was a well-organized race. So there's plenty of fast courses around. Don't worry, mate. You can go to some shit-house races that have fast courses. But I didn't want to do that. I wanted to go to the one part of the world major where I've watched it on TV. It was a highlight for me, even just being there. Mm. Right. Yeah, there's prestige about it.
we got to wrap this up. Brad's interviewing Madeline Hills tomorrow. Good luck with that, Brad. Looking forward to listening to that one. That's a big, big get for the show. We appreciate her time having a bit of a chat to Mr. Croker over there. What's coming up, boys, before we sign off?
Hopefully getting back to some running this week. That's what I'd like to do in between writing reports. I think we've got like 3 weeks till school holidays, so yeah, hanging out for that before going part-time next term.
Starting the retirement
package. It's
all been
a bit much for little Brad. All been a little much, this whole full-time work thing.
All about work-life balance and, might look at getting into something I'm a bit more passionate about.
Oh, Mr. Entrepreneur over there.
Yeah,
I hope it's not podcast production because Mike could be out of the job here.
No, it's safe.
Hey, so Gold Coast is not in school holidays for you, so you got to run that on the Sunday, back to work on the Monday.
Yeah, back to work on the Tuesday.
Oh, it's no good.
No, and then, so we've got another 4 or 5 days of work, and then holidays, which normally it is at the start of school holidays for us. But it's all out of whack this year.
Yeah, ACT is a bit out of whack. It's the start for us in Victoria here. Moose, what are you doing? Trying to sell some shoes. Not much happening.
Oh, it's all right. Well, I got some important stuff coming up this week. A lot of important businessman things to do.
Oh, yeah? Mm. Give us any hints?
Organising Gold Rush, it's like we're going to announce the new date of that in December. Trail run. Might have a partnership with a local, they're actually quite a big charity group that I'm having a meeting with this week for the event. What else? Got a meeting with another sort of local organisation about an event they want to put on. So, there's a bit going on.
You sound like Brady, but you're just doing it in Ballarat instead of Moama.
Mm. No, he just does parkrun, mate. They give him a yellow shirt and he thinks he's the king.
I haven't done parkrun for a couple of weeks. We've put on some new run directors, so I only get a go of it every 7 weeks now, which is nice. I've also got a meeting over in Shepparton, not Moama, Bradley, on Tuesday, which will be good. I'm going to run on the Shepparton track in the afternoon with Chris Armstrong and the Shepparton Runners Club over there. That's going to be fun, but everything else is going to be pretty chilled out. Our reports are written, proofread and everything, Brad, so they're done. And, keep chipping away. Rightio. Thanks, boys. Thanks for your time again. We're over and out. Oh,
alrighty.
Go to, if you're a Patreon and haven't responded to our questions about our bonus show that's talking about our shoes, you've got a couple of days to do that before we record. If you don't know what we're talking about, sign up to Patreon to get some bonus content over there. Beautiful. Thanks, guys.
See ya.
Yep, see ya.
Actually trying to think the last time we crossed paths. It's been
ages.
I know.
What, I don't know, like maybe we've been at a few races together but haven't really seen each other?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, do you do Gold Coast every year or?
I go up there. I've been up there the last two years. I think this will be my third year in a row.
I went up 2 years ago, but I sort of cheated and only ran a little bit of the 10K.
Oh, okay.
Ran half the 10K. Yeah. So I was the laziest person on the Gold Coast that weekend. But
reckon the last time was face-to-face would have been when you were living in Canberra.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Jeez,
a long time ago.
Which is something I think about a lot lately because it's obviously cold in Melbourne, but it's nothing on Canberra. And I remember I think I lasted – I probably ran like 10 times in the 12 months I lived in Canberra. Like,
because what year was that? Because I was at the AIS. That would have been between 2008 and 2011.
2009.
Mm,
yeah. It was my graduate year. And I kind of went there like partly because I thought, oh, maybe I'll get back into running because there's runners around.
Yeah.
And then Canberra winter happens. And, it was almost like what called my retirement, actually.
Well, and that's why we've sort of got you on here because although our listeners haven't sort of reached the heights that you have, you've got a pretty interesting story. And I think there's a lot of things that you've done through your career that listeners can relate to, like, you know, being a junior athlete, taking time away, coming back, juggling running and working. There's a lot of stuff we can touch on. And how'd you pull up from Bundoora?
Yeah, good. Oh, my goodness. I wouldn't say I was beaming with confidence going into it. I sort of took a nice break, you know, after Comm Games. And then I've obviously been running for the last month, but you know how you never feel. It takes a while to kind of get those sessions back and really feel great at anything. So I didn't feel like I was in Leonora shape, and I didn't feel like I was in 10K cross country shape. I'm somewhere moderately in between. So it was good. It was fun, I guess, because I, you know, it went well. But yeah. I was a little nervous.
And that's your first cross country race since when?
Since World Cross Country 2006.
Yeah, yeah. Which like we recorded the podcast last night, and the boys were wondering whether it's been like a conscious decision not to run cross country since you come back.
No, not at all. It's just that I've been away.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the difficult thing with it. Like, I'm sure there's a lot of runners who want to run it. But you know, it's obviously the longest distance that you'll run all year, probably for most of them.
Yeah.
At the time of year that you kind of want to be going overseas and, you know, being sharp for other things. So I think both world cross country cycles, I've kind of thought, oh, you know, I'd like to go. And actually I think it was whenever they're on their odd years, aren't they? So 2015, yeah. Our best friends were getting married and I flatly refused. I said, that's more important than going to World Cross, so I didn't even go to the trial.
Yeah.
And then the next one was Kenya, which just seemed slightly – Uganda, and I actually love Uganda, but I started to realize I probably wasn't ready for 10K cross country. So I guess, yeah, the weekend was – I don't know. I know 10K is 10K, but 10K cross country to me is more a half marathon kind of strength. And that was obviously my apprehension on the weekend too, knowing that I was running against half marathon type girls. But definitely not a conscious thing. And to be honest, I probably wouldn't have gone and run on the weekend if Craig hadn't made me. So in the weeks leading in, I'm never very pleased with him, but I do think he's probably made the right call.
Yeah, well, it's good to see you back doing cross country, because I guess most of our listeners won't know that you finished 16th and 18th at World Junior Cross, which was probably in a way the start of your would that probably be the standout performances of your sort of junior career?
Definitely the standout performances. I went to World Juniors when I was 16 turning 17 for the 1500, and then I actually missed, I qualified the next 2 years later for the steeple and the 1500, but I got injured before it. So my first World Juniors, I didn't do anything remarkable. I think I got there and I was so nervous I cried before the race, and I was probably never going to get out of the heat, to be honest, anyway. But the World Crosses, the first one was a 6, and both of them were 6K. And the first time I went, I'd never run anything further than, I think, 3K. Plus I'd done the fitness 5 in Wollongong once, which is 5K. But so certainly wasn't, you know, really sharp for it. But that went really well. And then the next time, I guess I probably expected to finish higher up in the numbers, but it was, you know, a different race and I was two spots behind. But definitely the standouts of my junior career.
Well, let's go back to that, how you actually got into the sport, because you've already touched on the fact that you're a Illawarra region girl growing up.
Yes.
How did you get into the sport initially?
I guess I got into it the same way most people do, just through school. I'm not from a particularly sporty family. My brother will have a go at anything. My sister, I honestly can't remember ever seeing kick a ball or hit a ball or run or do anything like that. So it was really just through school. And I was a little bit younger than most people in my year, so it was nothing nothing that we focused on too much. I think in year 6, I did go to national cross country. I was 10 years old. And then when I went to high school, I was actually a lot younger than anyone in high school. There wasn't even an age group for me. So, I sort of disappeared for a couple of years. And then towards the end of high school, I started to make some teams again. But it was just the community sort of aspect of it. I ran for Kembla Joggers, which is one of those great community clubs. There's, you know, so many kids, so many of the 70 plus guys still running around. So just a really encouraging group to be a part of. And our training was running from one tree to the next and back, and very low key, but certainly enjoyable.
And who was your first coach, and how did you get into sort of structured training outside of the school system?
Yeah. So my first coach was a man called Rob Bertocchio, and he just had a little running group which were mostly made up of Campbell Joggers kids. And so I imagine I found out about him through the group. And it was, I think, just maybe 6 months before I qualified for World Juniors that I was at the track one night and banged into a man called Dave Chisholm, who was my junior coach. And I started to train with him probably for the first time really on the track and with a bit of a focus. And I don't remember really targeting World Juniors as a qualifier or anything. It just sort of happened through the process. And so from, I guess, the age of 16, I started to run with him up until my first retirement, which was when I was 19.
Yes, which, yeah, and so with the so I guess what brought about your first retirement?
The way I remember it, which, you know, I'm sure at the time I probably, you know, had some different thoughts. So the way I remember it was I went to uni when I was 17. As a runner, I was on scholarship with Sydney Uni. Yeah. Used to jump in with you, actually, I think, sometimes. And the rest of the Sydney Uni group, Dean Gleeson was amazing with that. But I guess I always found it a little bit difficult in Sydney. I didn't have any of my main support crew. But I enjoyed it while things were going well. It's obviously running's very easy when things go well.
Yeah.
And I think it was in my second year of uni, I picked up my first ever injury. I was a very low mileage, low intensity sort of junior runner. And so I'd never had a niggle, and it was just an ITB syndrome, which did knock me out of World Juniors. And it ended up being, I guess, a long return to running, 6 months or so before I was back running. Which now that I understand a little bit more about strength work, I probably blame myself a little bit for how long that recovery took. I didn't really understand why it was so important to strengthen my glutes when it was my knee that was hurting. Yeah. So that was, you know, probably a large part of my fault. But, yeah, by the time I sort of was able to start running, I'd detached from a little bit. I'd isolated myself from running, you know, as a bit of a coping mechanism, I guess, and buried myself in other things. And I just never really found the love for it again in that rehab phase. And I, you know, I had a few commitments, obviously, with Sydney Uni on scholarship. I'd actually signed a contract with Puma as a junior, which was a really, really great opportunity I was very lucky to have. And so I tried to force myself, you know, will myself back into it. And I just never quite started to enjoy it again. And after about 6 months or so of really, you know, trying to get myself out the door and get running, I just, you know, decided, if I'm not enjoying this, why am I doing it? And that was really the main thing. And I sort of contacted everyone that I needed to, and obviously felt quite an amazing, you know, sense of relief when I'd made that decision. And I guess I probably felt pretty free.
Yeah. And from memory, you were pretty focused on your studies at that point as well, weren't you, with your pharmacy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, to be honest, my undergrad scores probably don't suggest that. But, yeah, I was just focused on being a normal uni student. And I'd always been that, you know, thinking of Dean Gleeson. He was telling a story to some of the athletes that I'm on teams with now about some of my antics at after parties and things. And I also, they were shocked. They didn't know I was the same person. And I also don't really remember some of the things I did. But, you know, I felt like I was a very balanced athlete, but there was always that, you know, that little burden, I suppose, of training and the responsibilities of what I should be doing. And I just remember when the running was gone, I could just be a normal uni student. Mm. I could plan a holiday without thinking about where I would run.
Yeah.
And I could really get stuck into planning my life without, yeah, thinking about the restrictions that running could bring. And I guess that's really how I felt. It was that there were restrictions rather than opportunities. So it was, you know, very clearly where my mind was at, that it wasn't something I was going to make any sacrifices for.
And so between that period, so 2006 or so through to when would you say that you then made the conscious decision to start back? What year would have that been?
Late 2013.
Yeah. So between that 6-7 years, what would be in the longest period of time that you actually did not go for a run?
Oh, honestly, 6 to 9 months.
Okay.
I think I felt almost embarrassed to go for a run for some time periods because I obviously wasn't quite as scrawny as I was as a junior. And I guess I had a little bit of an issue with that, or I certainly felt other people would judge me for it. And And also running's really hard when you're not fit. And so, you know, I'd go through phases where I'd, you know, you just expect that you can run 30 minutes. If you used to be a great runner, you can just go for a 30-minute run. And I couldn't. And, you know, I'd sort of persevere sometimes for, you know, maybe a few weeks. I'd run every second day. And then I'd, you know, I'd sort of never really quite, never feel good. Yeah. So I could always, you know, find a reason to stop running again. But I definitely had patches throughout that time where the idea of coming back to run, you know, would sort of, I'd get the idea, but I was never really, it was always just a thought. It was, it was, you know, the back of my mind, I'd think, look, you've run this for the steeplechase. And I think the Olympic qualifiers for quite a while were only 5 seconds or so faster, the B qualifiers. And so I think, come on, you know, if you just get your act together, you can just tick that box and you can say you went. And it was probably more that sort of sense of being able to say I did something than really truly wanting to. And obviously that's why, you know, it was always a short term.
Yeah.
A short term, I'm fad.
we'll definitely get to your Olympic achievements. And so do you remember the moment where something clicked and you went, you know what, I'm actually going to give this another go?
I actually do, which is strange because I'm pretty vague with some of my significant memories in my life. But I've been living in Adelaide with my now husband, and I'd started to run just pretty casually with Adam Diddick and his group in Adelaide Team Tempo. And Chris and I'd moved back to New South Wales maybe in August 2013. And I actually remember going for a walk near where we were living, just along the beach side. And obviously, I'd have been having conversations with myself about, you know, what do I want to do? Why am I not running on the track? And it's something Adam had talked to me a lot about, you know, would you like to do a track race? And I really didn't want to. I just thought it was very obvious if I was succeeding or failing, I suppose, if I went back and did something that I'd done before. And that was, I guess, you know, the hesitation in going back. And I actually remember walking along with my phone and writing this long message to Adam saying, do you know what, I've thought about it a lot, and you know, I used to be really good, and Comm Games is coming up, and I think probably I can go, and let's just give it a crack, and I don't care what event I qualify for, but let's just get me a spot, and I think I can do it, and let's, you know, I'm committed for 6 months. And that's basically what it was. And I actually think he might have got the message before you know, I spoke to my husband about that sort of being the goal. But yeah, it was very much that as well. It wasn't me saying I'm back in running and I'm back long term.
Yeah.
I think at that point it was still a little bit of, look, it's so close, I can qualify. Let's just get that senior track suit, tick that box, get on with your life and know that you were good enough.
Yeah.
And I think obviously, you know, the more I got back into running, started to run well, of course, but also really start to immerse myself back into the running community, I you know, obviously the passion genuinely returned, and I didn't stop at the end of 2014, which is probably what I thought I'd do in 2013.
And when you committed in 2013 for that 6 month period, were you working full time?
Yes, I was. So I'd moved back to Wollongong without any real secure plans for myself. Chris had plans, and I moved back and, you know, went around pharmacies in Wollongong, and I knew a lot of the pharmacists because I'd worked there before. And I ended up working, I think, between two or three pharmacies, sometimes 6-7 days a week, because you think, oh, I probably could squeeze another day in. And I think my biggest weeks would have been probably 60 hours, which I can't comprehend now. Yeah. But yes, I was definitely working. I was also studying a postgrad in international health, sorry.
Oh. All right, I've got so many things, so many different ways I can go with all of this. Firstly, how long did it take for you to actually feel like things started to click again when you started training consistently? And do you have any tips for people that have been out of the sport for a long time and are trying to get back into it?
Yes. it didn't take long at all, to be honest. I guess it had been, you know, such a long time since I'd trained that I wasn't really comparing myself to how I was. I didn't remember what it felt like to feel like that. So all I really felt was that I was feeling better than I did the week before. And that obviously in itself is encouraging. And, you know, you start to move better and move faster. And you know, some of the 10K road races that I was doing, which was the my reintroduction, you know, were improving significantly. I think I went from 40 minutes to 36 to 34 minutes in, I don't know, 2-3 months.
Yeah.
So obviously once I ran that, I think 34 minutes was the first time I thought, wow, I'm not that bad at these longer ones. You know, I can go and run all these fun runs and maybe get third and fourth, and that's so amazing. And, you know, that I was really pleased with that. But once I decided really to target Comm Games, I don't know. I just remember it all went perfectly. You know, yeah. I had a textbook 6 months leading into the trials. I had never run that much on the track when I was a junior. I'd never done big sessions. I think a big session for me would have been 8 400s on the track. And I thought that was crazy. And Lockie Chisholm, one of the boys I trained with, Lockie had run 12 or 16. And I thought he was just an absolute superstar. He's the first person I ever saw train, and I couldn't comprehend how he could run 16 reps of something and, you know, judge it perfectly pace-wise and not get slower. I just thought that was so amazing.
Yeah.
So when I came back at the end of 2013, every session was new. Everything was bigger than I'd ever done, but not in a huge way, but, you know, anything's bigger than 8 400s.
Yeah.
So I felt like I was constantly improving and doing things I hadn't done before. So, that 6 months leading in was into the Comm Games trial was perfect.
And any advice for people that have been out of it for a while want to get back into it?
It's just to take it a day at a time. Be happy with where you are each day, because that's all. I mean, that's all you can do anyway. There's no point in writing a goal that's so far away. You know, there's so many steps between reaching the ultimate goal and where you currently are. And the ultimate goal sort of reveals itself as you progress along anyway. So I think it's just, yeah, being happy where you are today, trying to be better, not every day, because obviously every day you don't get better, but just, you know, trying to improve, work on one little thing each week. I mean, I still write myself goals for the week, and sometimes they're as small as making sure I sleep enough this week. That's my goal, get 8 hours sleep every night. Yeah. But I think that's how you do it, just by setting little goals and ticking it off and you know, that consistency, which is the cheesiest line for a distance runner to say, but it's so true.
Yeah,
You know, it all just improves, even if you don't change anything.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's go on to Glasgow. So what were your expectations going in? And to finish fourth is an amazing achievement, but I guess fourth's always that unlucky position, isn't it, where you just miss a medal. But what were your expectations going in?
Expectations changed a lot in the 6 months leading in. So I came second at the trial in what was a pretty big PB, I think around 9:48. I remember being disappointed with that, which is probably a good sign that I expected more of myself. But at that point, I honestly thought, if I come 10th, I'm happy with that. I get to go and be in the team, and this is amazing. And as each month ticked away, I improved and my times came down. So by the time the games came around, I think around 9:36, which ranked me around 5th or 6th in the Commonwealth. And when you're 5th or 6th, you obviously say, hey, I might as well be 3rd. So
yeah,
we definitely were targeting a medal. I ran it that way. I think I was maybe popped into the front with a lap to go, but obviously didn't hold on. But I don't know. I don't remember being that disappointed. I think obviously a medal gets you opportunities. I think that's really all I missed out on. And you know, people who came forth at Gold Coast will start to see that too. Sometimes it'd be really nice to get to say you got that medal when you know how close it was, because you're either a medalist or you're not. But after the race, I was just so excited by what I'd done. I really don't remember feeling that disappointed.
Yeah.
And I was just so excited to know that I did that. I think it was probably my 4th steeplechase in 8 years. So I thought, you know, geez, imagine what I can do next year. So I was really encouraged by it. I was inspired by all the people on the team that I got to be with. I learned a lot. I obviously went in there very naive, and each year I learned more and more from the people around me. But yeah, I walked away very excited. Mum and Dad were beaming. They came over. And yeah, I was just looking forward to the next year.
And did life then, so did you, was it after that that you decided to stop working full time and focus a little bit more on the running, or you're still full time at that point?
Yeah, I was still full time. So I actually only cut down work in the Olympic year.
Yeah.
And full time for, I guess, a lot of people in healthcare and lots of different professions, but full time's not 36 hours. Full time's in pharmacy would be 50 hours is not that much. So, you know, a standard pharmacy day, go 8:30 to 6:30, and you don't get a break as a pharmacist, or the whole store has to close. So, you know, a 10-hour day was standard, and, you know, five of those would be fine. And my cut down was cutting down to four, which now I understand is more than a normal full-time load. But at the time I thought, wow, I only have to do 4 days. This is, you know, gosh, what a luxury I have. And it was actually only after I'd been selected, so literally name on the plane to go to Rio, that was when I cut down, I think, to maybe 25 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's get on to Rio. So I'd say that, well, you're definitely our most credentialed guest with a seventh place at the Olympics and two finals at the One Olympics. So between 2014 and 2016, everything went pretty well, or did you have a few setbacks along the way?
Definitely had setbacks. I guess, you know, on paper, it looks like I continued to improve, you know, throughout the process, but I had lots of setbacks. I guess from Com Games to about, I don't know, June 2015, so that 9 months or so, was a rapid progression, and everything was pretty perfect. But to be honest, I didn't have a great World Champs in 2015. I probably judged the year wrong. It wasn't terrible. I did run the steeplechase in the 5K, so it's all relative. But I missed the final in both of those by one spot, and really underperformed in the 5K, and just, I guess, didn't really run out of my skin in the steeple. But from there, I started to have quite a few setbacks. So I went into the Olympic trial with a torn calf and was advised by medical not to run, but it was really important to me to get to run in Olympic trials. I'd never done one. I wanted to get to run over the line and know I was on the team. So I did do that one, but I was only able to run the steeple. I wasn't allowed to run both. And to be honest, the build-up to the Olympics was pretty pretty tough. I recovered from that, but had taken some time off training in order to, you know, obviously rehab it. Started off on a bit of a European campaign, ran terribly. I went to Doha not out of shape, but probably with ambitions that were too lofty for where I was actually at. So had a disappointing performance, went to Shanghai on my birthday, fell over on the water barrier for the first time, didn't finish the race, flew to what was my base for quite a few years in the UK in Loughborough, got off the plane and the coach who was working with me quite a lot and then took over as my full-time coach, Rob, sort of said to me, look, you've got 3 months till the Olympics and you are not fit. You know, you were a lot better last year, but we can fix it. You just got to work your butt off. And so that's sort of how the 6 months leading into the Olympics went. I had a good performance, a bad performance here and there. And then it started to, you know, obviously look like it was going to be just a great, 6 weeks leading in. I ran a really big PB in the 1500, and then the very next race, which was my last race going before the Olympics, was the London Diamond League, and I'd had this foot pain. Spoke to the physio beforehand, they said, nah, I think it's all good. And as I was running, this foot just kept hurting, and I actually pulled out of the race, which at the time I was absolutely hysterical. I thought, oh my god, what did I just do? You know, am I being a sook? Is there something wrong? If there's something wrong, that's not good. If I'm being a sook, that's not good. And the next day I had a scan and found out I had a fracture in my metatarsal. And that was 3 weeks before the Olympics. So again, offloaded and turned up to the Olympics, I guess, hoping for the best. And obviously, you know, it's a good example that you don't get fit in the last few weeks. It's a lot to do with what you've done in the years leading in. And yeah, I was able to take advantage of that. But, 2016 was tough.
Yeah. So in the lead up, so Adam was still coaching you all the way up to the Olympics?
Yes, Adam was still my coach. I'd had two coaches really leading into the Olympics. I had first gone to Europe in 2015, quite early. I sort of had a slightly odd racing calendar in 2015. And when I'd arrived there, actually on recommendation of one of the people from AA who was British, it said, look, go to Loughborough. There's, you know, a British training base there and there's some people there who look after you. And so in May 2015, I landed in Loughborough, got off the train in Loughborough and knew nobody. It was a totally crazy decision. I don't know if I could do it again, to be honest. And the first day I was there, I met Rob, who then became my full-time coach. But, yeah, Rob Denmark is employed by British Athletics. Yeah. And he would just come and supervise my sessions in 2015. And I guess over the next 12 to 18 months, his role became a lot bigger. So by the time the Olympics came around, he was very involved in sort of planning out my 2 months before the Olympics, particularly in race schedules. He was pretty honest with me and said, look, you know, you came over here early 2015 and we're in great shape, and by the time world champs came, you know, you'd lost it all. And so he was very involved in sort of trying to make me peak at the right time and you know, just I guess sharpen me up a little bit for those 1500s and give me the confidence. But Adam was obviously still very much my coach, and I was lucky to have both of them in Rio. So Adam Didick was the marathon coach for the Olympic team, and Rob was there with the Great Britain team. So when I actually landed in Rio, Rob was still back at the holding camp with the marathoners. Adam was back at the holding camp with the marathoners. And so my first few days in Rio, I actually had Rob supervising. So it was a transition, I guess, officially straight after the Olympics, Rob took over. But he had been involved for quite a while.
So with the roller coaster year you had in 2016, how did you keep yourself in such a positive frame of mind, especially in that last 3 weeks? So what was the advice from your coaches for that last 3 weeks in terms, because you obviously couldn't really run because of what the scan had shown. And so what training did you do in that last 3 weeks?
In terms of me staying positive, it was entirely the people around me, and that includes Adam and Rob, and my husband and, you know, training partners and everybody else. I was an absolute roller coaster. I would wake up some days and cry and hardly be able to get myself out the door to cross train, and it was them who sort of forced me. So those last 3 weeks came together because of everyone around me. The advice, I mean, the ideal advice was that I didn't run in the Olympics. But the Australian team obviously realised that, you know, no one willingly pulls out of the Olympics. So I think they knew I was always going to line up. I was told really not to run until the Olympics, and I didn't entirely take that advice. I was diagnosed when I was in London. The medical team from Australia wanted me to fly straight to Florida and be at the holding camp, and I didn't want to change my plans. I'd had an original, you know, I knew what date I was meant to fly into Florida, so I actually told them that I wasn't going to fly in early. I wanted to stay in Loughborough. Rob was there. I had people I was living with who were my friends. I knew where to cross train. And so that's what I did. I cross trained, you know, with everyone else around me that I knew really well by then. And then I headed into the holding camp. So I did run before the Olympics. I didn't just turn up and hope for the best, but we just managed it. Every run had a really clear purpose. So it was the sessions that I was doing. I still got to do sessions, I think, in the 10 days before my races. And I was really lucky to have Philo Saunders pace me in some, and I got some really great sessions out. But other than that, I was bike, pool, elliptical, and Ultra G.
Which is still hard to do because if you're like most distance runners, they're pretty particular with the way they want things to go into a lead up to a competition. And so there's always that doubt about, oh, well, you know, here I am swimming instead of running. Is this going to work? And obviously it did, to finish, you know, seventh in the steeplechase and then make the 5K final and finish 10th, I believe.
Yeah.
And how much pain were you in for both those races?
Oh, to be completely honest, I never notice pain when I'm doing a session or a race. So I never felt it throughout the races. I remember in the days between, I definitely felt it when I was jogging. But it was never excruciating. I mean, it was never excruciating. It hurt, but you know, I knew something wasn't right, but I could run on it. Yeah. So I think in terms of me having confidence, you know, standing on the start line, a lot of it came from one session I did in Florida, because exactly, I'm the same as every other runner. I doubted, you know, everything I'd done before, and I was sure I'd lost all my fitness. But I had a session that, yeah, Philo helped me for in Florida, that I'd done once before. It was a session of Rob's, and it was a real sharpen up sort of session. I did it just before my 1500 PB, and it was something along the lines of a 200 in, you know, 32 seconds, kind of comfortable, flat out 800, and then two 400s. And when I'd done it, you know, before my 1500 final, 1500 PB, I obviously knew what time I'd run. And then I think with Philo, we ran it slightly faster. And so obviously that was enough to make me think, okay, I'm all right. I'm not slow. I'm good to go. So I think that was probably the session that, you know, that gave me something to feed off. I didn't have to look back 1 month from a session. I didn't have to look that my last race I'd done, I hadn't finished.
Yep.
I was able to say, no, I did this. I followed Philo. This is what we ran, and it was really good. And so I was able to line up, you know, pretty relatively confidently. It's still the Olympics. You're never confident. Yeah. It's scary. But, able to have a little bit to draw on.
And then I guess you can also flip the negative into a positive in that at least you're going to go in fresh, whereas there's instances where people have been in great shape going into a championship, but because they have been able to train the way they wanted, they may have overcooked it in those last couple of weeks. So I guess you didn't have that issue.
No, I didn't at all. And you're right. I've had, you know, races, not really championships necessarily, but races that have been targets where, you know, I've gone in and felt flat, and when we've sort of looked at the training calendar, we can see, oh right, 10 days before that was your race. I had an amazing training session, and oh wow, that's when the race should have been. And you know, I was overdone by the time the race came. So absolutely, that was, you know, a big plus for me in that way. And the whole week sort of just rolled on momentum.
Yeah.
You know, if the first race hadn't gone well, I don't quite, the 5K wouldn't have gone well either.
Yeah.
Would
have you done the 5K? Were you always going to do the 5K, or you were just going to see how the help pulled up after the steeple?
Oh, look, I think I would have always run it. And the reason I say that is that there was another girl who'd qualified who hadn't been selected and may or may not have been selected, you know, regardless of whether I had been. But I think simply knowing that there's someone sitting at home watching the race meant I was always going to line up.
Yeah.
I was never going to say, oh, you know what, my steeple went well or my steeple went poorly and I can't be bothered.
Yeah.
So I think going into it, I probably said, oh, look, I'll only run it if everything goes well. But when the actual race came around, the steeplechase final and the 5K heat were only 24 hours apart. And I remember people saying, oh, you know, are you going to run it? And it was never a question. I thought, I'm exhausted, but of course I am. So, yes, yeah. I was, yeah, definitely going to line up.
Well, there you go. I'm sure the listeners can get a lot out of that, running PBs at an Olympics with a less than ideal preparation. with the Olympics, can you just give us an idea? Because I've heard stories where, like, at a local athletics meet or even in, you know, at a Grand Prix in Australia, you sign in an hour before, you pretty much rock up 15 minutes before the race to the call room and on you go. But I believe that at the Olympics, you need to be at call rooms like an hour before and you're often just standing around waiting. Is that true?
Yeah. To be honest, the whole the hours leading into the race were meticulously planned by Adam, not just for me, for any athlete he was looking after. It's a real strength of his. So I never had to stress or worry about anything on race day. We had a really strange schedule for Rio, and I think it was to do with the TV time. So I actually ran the first three of my four races in the morning, including an Olympic final, which is really strange. And I think those races were run between, let's say, 9 a.m. and, you know, 10:30 a.m. So by the time you factor in a warm-up and getting to the venue, which, yes, involves security checks and a bus ride and all of those things, plus breakfast, you know, I woke up three mornings at 4:30 a.m. to have breakfast in time and, you know, be on the bus. The process. I remember meeting Adam downstairs in the village. He'd walk us to the bus. The bus, I think, went for, I might get this wrong, but I'm going to say we'd allow an hour by the time he got on the bus and got off for security. Call rooms, there's two call rooms in most of the championship meets, And I think it was, I don't think it was excessively long, maybe 30 to 40 minutes, but possibly not even that long. But the interesting thing about Rio was there was no consistency. So if, you know, you might think, oh, she's done the heat, you know what to expect for the final. That's not true. You know, sometimes you needed to bring a new number. Sometimes you didn't need to bring a new race number. Sometimes you were allowed to do run through. Sometimes you weren't. Sometimes you had water bottles. Sometimes you didn't. So you just had to roll with it. And that message was passed on pretty quickly from other athletes, you know, that, that you just, everyone's situation was very different. So, yeah, you had to just be very, very flexible and adapt to what was going on. I turned up to my 5K final without a race bib, and they said to me, where is it? You should have it from the heat. And I hadn't had to do that for the steeplechase. And it was actually probably one of the moments I did keep very calm. And I just said, well, you sort it out. You know, if, it's not my fault. I can't get one now, can I? And I was just, you know, I handed the problem over to them. And of course, they produced a race bib, which is great because I have an extra race bib now, which is really cool to have an extra one from the Olympics. And yeah, so it was a bit unorthodox, a bit patchy, but everyone made it to the start line.
And between Rio and now, you obviously had took some time off after the Olympics to get the body 100% and had a few ups and downs since then.
I have. I've had some really high highs and plenty of low lows. I think it's been, you know, a tough nearly 2 years since the Olympics. I've learned a lot. I've obviously made a lot of changes. I made a lot of changes after the Olympics. One was obviously a coaching change. Another one was moving to Melbourne, starting gym, increasing my mileage, stopping work for nearly 12 months, which was a really interesting adjustment for me, and one that I didn't stick with. I am back at work. Didn't really agree with me, but I've had a lot of difficult patches, but again, on paper, you know, I've ticked the boxes. I've made every major team. I've run PBs, but I haven't got what I wanted out of the last 2 years.
Let's get back to the juggling work and running. So I've also heard Benny Saint say that he ran better when he was working than compared to when he, you know, basically went full-time athlete. What were the downsides that you found of being a full-time athlete?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's different is the first thing I'd say. So some people probably thrive in an environment that, you know, is all about running and that's their focus. I guess I've always wondered if I would. So I'm really grateful to have been able to take the time off that I did. I just found it all-consuming. Chris and I moved to Melbourne, I guess, 2 months after the Olympics. Nothing to do with the Olympics. It was just the timing that we ended up having. And I remember Chris saying, look, you know, you're not looking for a job. You've got this opportunity. You know, financially we don't need to. You had a good Olympics that, you know, gives you some opportunities. Do this properly. And I was really excited to do that too. And I remember, you know, things are great when things are going well. So I had, you know, a few months where I'd wake up at 7:30 and I'd head out the door at 9:30 for a run. And, you know, I'd have brunch with the girls, you know, the other athletes at the VIS, and, you know, I'd have a little nap. And, you know, it's a very, it's a lovely life, very relaxed. And I did that for a few months, I guess, but I ended up getting injured, which was probably a few factors, things like, you know, gym changes and, starting gym, actually doing it, but also increasing mileage. But I think the more so, or certainly another factor, was that every single day, all I was doing was running. So on a day like a Monday, where now I would just go for an easy run and I'd run it as slow or as fast as, you know, felt right for that particular day, when all I was doing was running, I'd wake up and think, oh, I'm tired. Okay, we've got this 50-minute run. Well, you better do it well. You know, because that's all you've got. You could just get through 50 minutes and that's all you've got to do, or you've got that in gym. And so those little decisions where you sort of wake up and think, I'm a bit sore, I might either not run, I might cross train, or maybe I'll just cut it short. I never allowed myself to do that because I thought, you know, it's 50 minutes and then you've got nothing else for the rest of the day. So I think I just stopped listening to my body a little bit. And I also just put a lot more pressure on myself for things like sessions or anything that was measurable. Because again, I think, look, this is your work. This is what you're doing for the day. You better do a good job of it. And so I actually think I enjoyed it a little bit less because there was just so much focus on what I was doing all the time, rather than just getting through it, do your best, yep, tick the box.
Yeah, so just so there's not as much balance there in your life, is
no,
there?
No, there's not. And I think, you know, I've always obviously kept my interest elsewhere. I was doing some volunteering at Hepatitis Victoria. Majority of my friends are not runners. So I still had all of that. My husband's not a runner. But I think just in terms of that sense of achievement at the end of the day, it was all coming from running, and I was not used to that.
Yeah.
And so I do think sort of my moods and my happiness was much more dependent on how I was going running.
Yeah.
And of course, when you get injured, you're not doing a very good job running. So, I think I just – the joy started to almost be zapped from it, because there was so much more placed on it, and expectations, you know, that I put on my performances more than anybody else did. It's me who puts the pressure on. I think I just do better having something else, and the running just fits in, and, you know, you do your best, but it's running.
And so now you're, what, 25 hours a week work?
No, I'm full-time.
You're full-time now?
Yeah, I am. I'm working in a slightly different role and still a pharmacist, but I'm working for a pharmacy consulting company, which I have an amazing boss. It's quite a flexible job, but it is full-time, so I can play with those hours a little bit. Today is probably a really good example, actually. I had a run, an hour run, and gym and a massage, which I got all of that done before I started work today. But I didn't start work at 9, I started work at 10.
Yeah.
And I finished at 5, actually, and I'll make up that extra hour sometime later in the week. So it's I have that little bit of flexibility. I try to still stick to pretty much a 9-to-5 just to fit in with, you know, everybody else. I am working full time now.
And can you talk us briefly through how your current setup works? Because you're coached by correspondence, but you're training with a group in Melbourne.
Oh, okay. So that's another change.
Oh, a new change. Yep.
It is. Yeah. So after World Champs 2017, which I didn't, again, get quite what I wanted out of it.
Yeah.
To be honest, I'd never planned to run a 10K and a 5K at World Champs. I'd always planned to run the steeplechase. I think the last steeplechase I ran was at the Olympics, which is absurd. Mm-hmm. But I've just had a series of injuries that have kind of prevented me from really getting into some jumping work. So I ran World Champs in the 5 and the 10, was a little underdone. And after that, we sort of sat down with Rob, my British coach, and he said, look, I think you need to have some, you know, consistent eyes on you. And I think that person is Craig. I'd done a few sessions with Craig Mottram and his group earlier in the year, and I'd known Craig a long time, and I really liked the boys. And so we came up with the plan, I guess, last August to regularly run with Craig's group, which I started to do from then. So I've been running all my sessions since August 2017 with Craig and the group, which initially, you know, Craig said, look, I'm happy to have you, but there's rules. You've got to come. You know, you don't just rock up when you feel like it. You come, you're part of the team, you know, you do your long run with us, you are one of us.
Yeah.
But a lot of my sessions were still coming from Rob. But I guess, you know, having a coach physically at my training, something I've actually never ever had before.
Yeah.
And obviously there's a huge value in that. So leading into the games, I'd wrote on my profile that I was coached by Rob and Craig. But again, after a championship, we all sat down and did have a talk, and Rob was in agreeance that, you know, it was a little difficult getting so many messages from so many places.
Yeah.
I'm no longer coached by correspondence. I have a coach who sees me and who has to put up with all my frustrations, you know, firsthand. So, yeah. Now I'm coached by Craig.
And how's a standard week look for you at the moment?
Pretty similar to how it was leading into the games. I was actually, I wasn't injured at the Comm Games at all, but I was injured towards the end of last year. I had an Achilles tendonitis issue, which, is quite a frustrating one, as anyone who's had it would know that, you know, it's as long as a piece of string, how long it takes for you to get back. And actually Craig was fantastic for that because, he certainly had, you know, years and years of Achilles issues. So I I only really run once a day. So leading into the games, I was only running once a day. I've actually just started to run twice a day. But so my current schedule looks like a Monday would be an hour run in gym, which I do in at the VIS with the strength and conditioning coach. Tuesday, I do a little shakeout in the morning, which is now up to 30 minutes. And I do a track session Tuesday evening. Last week, I did my first ever quarters session, which is tougher than it sounds. But normally, I do something, you know, anywhere between 400 meter and 1K reps sort of type session with a 6 to 8K volume. Wednesday, I do an hour. Thursday, 30 minutes in the morning and a threshold in the afternoon. Friday is just whatever I feel like, so it tends to be around 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Saturday is longer reps, something between 5 and 10 minute reps. Saturday afternoon I usually cross train, and Sunday 90 minute long run.
Yeah. So a pretty standard week to what I guess
very
most distance
week, yeah.
And have you found that across, like, you've had some pretty high credentialed coaches in your career. Mm-hmm. Would you say that they're coaching philosophies are all very similar?
Yes. Yeah, I would. And despite me obviously having a few, you know, niggles and frustrations over the last 2 years, at the same time I've obviously been able to pump out some decent performances in there. And I think that's probably been a result of, as much as I'm saying, there's lots of changes, you know, pretty similar training across the board. I think it seems to be a global thing. I have no idea why everyone does a long run on a Sunday. Every, you know, all the coaches I've had, it's been three sessions a week rather than, you know, I know in America some of them do two. I've always had the Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday schedule. Friday's the easier day.
Yeah,
it seems to be very consistent around the world.
Yeah.
And I've sort of sat around similar mileage, you know, in the last two, three years really.
So what would your mileage be at the moment?
At the moment, I think it's between 100 and 110. So it's not huge.
Yep.
But I seem to sit pretty comfortably around that. I think anything over 120 previously has been a danger zone. I don't think it necessarily is now, but I guess, you know, there's that little bit of caution if I was to get up that way. But yes, I'm around the 110 I seem to be pretty comfortable with.
And I've got two more questions for you. Mm-hmm. One, do you regret taking that time off, you know, that 6 or 7 years, or do you think it's actually made you a better runner?
I do not regret it at all. It's a really common question, obviously, because, you know, you sort of do wonder sometimes what would have happened in those years. But I think each year I become more and more confident that I do not regret it at all.
Yeah.
I think there's so much more to life than running. And I would hate to be at my age right now, I'm 31 now, feeling like I'd missed out on anything. Yeah. And running is about sacrifices and, of course, or investments, I think, is the more positive term to use. But, you know, it is about sometimes missing out on things. And, of course, you know, sometimes I miss out on things now. But I just feel like I got to do everything when I should have. I got to travel. I got to be a uni student. I have a career. You know, if something happens to me tomorrow when I'm out running and I can never run again, I have something I love and have established as a fallback. Well, not even a fallback, it's something to, you know, I often feel frustrated that I'm not able to pursue, you know, certain things in my career more than I've been able to in the last few years. So I have no regrets in that regard. The only teeny tiny thing I can think of as a negative is, I guess that my body is not as resilient as it probably would be or could be if I'd run all those years. You know, the consistency line with running, I don't have really. I guess I now have 4 years, which is great. But 2 years ago when I first started to have, you know, my string of injuries, I didn't really have that much of a base.
Yeah.
And yes, potentially I may have had less of those issues if, you know, I'd had a bit more strength in my legs. I'm not a really strong runner. Lots of things are really new to me still. So I guess I've missed a little bit of development there, but I still wouldn't trade that.
And you still got plenty of time on your side, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think so. And the thing that I'm, you know, really enjoying seeing now is, you know, a few other girls who've done got sort of similar stories to myself. I ran, you know, the mile in Leonora, a little country town in WA, or a mining town in WA, and the girl who beat me is a wonderful girl who's also from Wollongong, Chloe Tai, who, you know, had her own little frustrations when she was a junior. She's taken a few years off, you know, established a career, and she's back running really, really well. And I just think it's great to see, you know, quite a few, I'll say women, but, you know, I'm sure there's men around as well, who are kind of doing a few things and realizing you can still come back to running. And obviously, eventually you'll miss your time if you wait too long. But yeah, I'm certainly, you know, there's quite a few girls around who've done similar things to me, and hopefully, you know, will be on the teams with me soon as well. So yeah, I really like to see that there's lots of people who are kind of exploring things other than running.
Yeah, and that's what's great about the sport, is that there's not many sports in the world that you can actually still get better into your late 30s and even into your 40s if you're doing some of the longer events.
Exactly. I mean, even, you know, 2 days ago I stood on the start line with Sinead. I'm not going to say how old she is because I'm not certain exactly, but I know she's over 40. So, you know, and she was second place, and she was well and truly the main competitor I had, you know, and she's getting better every year. So, yeah, there's, you know, plenty of years left if I want to take them. I don't know how long I'll be running for, but, yeah, I mean, people can defy the standard model of running plenty of different ways.
And my last question was future goals. So what have you got your eyes on in the sort of, I guess, next couple of years?
I guess the thing I'm most excited to really have made a decision on is that, without any question, I really want to go back to the steeplechase. I obviously did quite well in Rio, and you know, in those first 6 months or so, I was desperate to go back to it. And like anything, when you've been away from something for a while, you lose a little bit of confidence. So the last 12 months or so, I haven't really been sure if I wanted to go back. And I don't know what it is. I guess a little bit of realization that I'm actually quite good at shorter races. I don't have to throw myself into the 10K. I'm not too bad at the shorter races. I don't know, something's been lit. And I'm pretty excited to go back and explore that and really, you know, not have my PB come from the Olympic final. That's not what happens. You know, Olympic finals are not traditionally PB races. They're tactical. So I think there's more in there if I can, you know, give it another good crack and really get stuck in. So I guess that's my goal, is to obviously get to be in Tokyo, which is not a given. It's, you know, it's hard to make an Olympic team. But, yeah, to hopefully be there. And I never really have a place goal. I'm not going to say I, you know, want to get a medal, because I actually think that's a bit silly. I have no idea what everyone else is going to do in the race. But I would, you know, like to go there and do my best. And I, you know, whatever that ends up being is what it is. But I think that can be good if I, you know, commit to the next 2 and a little bit years. So that would be, I guess, the big goal.
Yep. So no marathon plans in the near future.
No, I won't say who it was, but I did have, in the middle of my Com Games campaign, which probably wasn't the best timing, I did have one of our marathon greats tell me I should be running the marathon.
Probably Monar, I'd say.
Possibly. Which for about, I don't know, for the next 3 or 4 days, which we're actually leading into my 5K, which is probably not the right time, but I started to think maybe I could be a marathoner. And then I watched the Gold Coast Commonwealth Games marathon, and halfway through I thought, you know what, no, I don't want to do this. So no plans of a competitive marathon. I've always wanted to go and have a bit of a play in the half marathon, and I was a bit tempted to try to do that this year, but those plans are certainly going to be delayed a few years. But I think the half, maybe I could have a bit of ability over.
Yep.
But I mean, the marathon's a whole other beast, isn't it? No, I won't be running that.
And you're in Gold Coast? You're going up there for the weekend?
Yeah, so I'll be on the 10K start line in the Gold Coast with a couple of my training partners.
Oh, great.
I'm really excited for it. I ran it 2 years ago. I ran just 5K of the 10K in the build up to Rio 2 years ago. But it's just such a great weekend, and I've got a lot of, you know, friends running the marathon, running different events. So, I'll do my work on Saturday, and then I'll probably be out with a few, encouraging signs, which hopefully I'll make between now and then. to cheer some people on.
I might see you up there. I'm pacing the lead women in the marathon, so it should be fun.
What time have you been asked to run?
It hasn't been confirmed, but it'll be between 2:25 and 2:26 pace, I think.
Okay.
For anywhere up to 35K.
Or maybe you'll have a couple of the Aussie girls in there chasing the jackpot.
Yeah, hopefully they're on the back. I heard they might have a separate pace group at that sort at 2:28, but it'd be cool to have a big pack through at sort of 2:25, 2:26.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, it'll be really good.
But thank you so much for your time tonight. I'm sure the listeners have got a heap out of that, and you've achieved so much, but I'm sure there's a lot more to come, and we look forward to following your journey.
Thanks, Greggs.
Chat soon.
See you.
Bye. Stay hungry.